and how often I would be writing about other husbands and fathers in other times. What I write is real, because I felt it. Many Christmases have come and gone since my sister and I waved at that image on a screen in a little Wyoming town. That's the Christmas I remember most often. With it, I think of men and women today, standing the watch, doing their part to keep our troubled world calm and bright. Carla Kelly. Chapter 1. Not long before Christmas 1811. An orphan of many years, Sailing Master Andrew Hadfield, Royal Navy, never expected much mail. From his earliest days at sea, he expected nothing except official directives as his career advanced. A warranted officer, he waited for such a letter now from the Navy Board, assigning him to another ship, once he was cleared to depart from hospital. Safely ashore at Stonehouse Hospital in Devonport, he was several months into recovery, from 2 hungry years captive of the French in a Spanish prison, overlooking the Bay of Biscay. The boatswain's mate died soon after their arrival at the naval hospital, and Captain Tate had been released from the officer's ward in another block. 4 remained. Before he left, Captain Tate promised to invite Andrew to spend Christmas with his family in Kent.
"I owe you my life, Master Hadfield," he told Andrew, as his son helped him from the ward.
He did. Captain Tate had been too weak to survive under his own power after they tied a rope made of every rag they wore and shinnied naked down the outer wall of their prison. 2 of their number fell to their deaths. When the makeshift rope ran out, Andrew grabbed the captain and jumped into the ocean. It had been the effort of Andrew's life to swim toward an alert, fast dispatch vessel sailing for England. Exhausted by even the skinny weight of Captain Tate on his back, Andrew barely survived. The FDV hauled them aboard and sailed back to the blockade to transfer them, the captain deeming them in too desperate a situation for even the short dash to Portsmouth. Reeking and filthy, the escapees suffered further as buckets of seawater were poured on them on the blockader's deck. Andrew took cold comfort in knowing any who died of that shock would be buried at sea and not dumped in the prison's hogpen. Captain Tate must have forgotten about the invitation once he left Stonehouse. No letter came. No matter. Andrew prepared to spend Christmas in the ward, assisting the tough-as-nails matron. That Navy Board letter would come soon, announcing his next ship. As he ate and rested, Andy Hadfield discovered another healing property of Stonehouse Hospital. The constant stress of his naval calling rested more lightly upon him there. Because of his special gift with nautical mathematics, he had become a sailing master. From the captain down, every tar knew Andrew's value, and with value came unending stress. As a master, he was responsible for a ship's trim. The weight balance from bow to stern, and optimizing of sails to keep a ship afloat and dangerous to the enemy. Every lieutenant on a frigate outranked him, but all deferred to his quarterdeck command in battle. Sailing masters knew their killing trade. Last night's gathering after the evening meal gave him food for thought. The boatswain was a wise man, and everyone listened when he spoke.
"Lads, I've been thinking. Christmas is nearly upon us. Just for fun, if you could ask for any present, what would you like?"
First, there was good-natured laughter from men who never received gifts, and who had probably been at sea for all Christmases since King Louis lost his head and Napoleon set Europe ablaze with his ambition. Silence. Then a foretopman spoke.
"My gift to myself. Passage to America. I'll become a Yankee."
Hoots and laughter followed. The cook wished for a sponge cake with gooey icing, which brought enthusiastic applause. The carpenter's mate wanted his tools back, left behind when their frigate sank, and they had no choice but to swim to Spain and surrender.
"What would you make?"
someone asked. The carpenter nudged the foretopman.
"I'll build you a nice cabin in America."
They looked at him. Andrew tried to shrug off their attention.
"It's nothing,"
he attempted to answer, but the others were having none of it.
"Confess, Master Hadfield,"
the boatswain bellowed in his official loud voice.